Hello, gorgeous.
I would make a great queen because I am so stubborn.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Never take a learning opportunity away from another student. No matter how smart you need everyone to think you are.
I am dancing a bright beam of light.
For the food.
What's up, everybody? This is I'm Here for the Food, where we discuss topics that feed your mind, your spirit, and your soul. I am Melissa.
I'm Blue.
And it's just, and then there were two.
And then there were two. For now.
For now.
For now.
Like we told you guys in the last episode, we are going to have a rotating third chair. But our guest today, we literally got the notice, you know, like, we had to run to the studio.
Yeah.
So we couldn't figure out the third chair. We were just so excited to find, you know, to be able to book him. Here's a little hint as to who he is.
Close up of the book.
Close up of the books. And he is the husband of one of our favorite guests, fan favorite, Marcia Dyson.
We love her. She's coming back.
Yeah, she's absolutely going to come back. And her and I have already discussed what it is that she wants to talk about.
Nice.
When I say it's going to blow your socks off, what I love so much about that woman is her fearlessness.
Yeah.
You know, I love that about her. I love that when she speaks her truth, it is inconvenient and she makes no apologies for it. She's not disrespectful. She is classy. She is grace personified, but she is a spitfire and that's my mama. I am so grateful to have a woman like her in my life.
Can we just discuss how funny it is that this is an interview where he's going to be there, but he's being introduced as her husband?
Hmm.
Nice, like, flip of events, huh?
Hmm. I can't wait to talk about when I met her, because I had known Dr. Dyson first. I'd known him
first. Is that the first time we've said his name?
It is the first time that we said his name. But
cat's out the bag.
Yeah, the cat's out the bag. But I had known him for 6 years.
Wow.
Before her, yes. And he was, you know, a mentor. He was one of the most fascinating people I'd ever met in my entire life. Like literally when he starts talking, my brain was like swimming. Like if you think you're intelligent and then he walks in the room, you start to feel like the biggest dumbass in the entire world.
I'm just giddy about being around someone who knows so many words, right?
Yeah.
Like I tend to sometimes when I have conversations with people, have to remember to keep my words accessible.
Mm-hmm.
He's a walking dictionary. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, he is. And so, he was my mentor for 6 years before I met Marcia. And then I met Marcia and we were on a double date together. And then after the date, the next day, we were all in Miami at the time. The next day, Marcia and I went to lunch. We went to lunch together at the Mondrian. And I discovered what it meant when you say the woman behind the man. I started to hear so much similarity in the way he talks and the way she talks. And I realized he is definitely inspired by her.
Even Michael Eric Dyson can be inspired by the woman in his life.
Yeah.
As it should be, by the way.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Yes. So Dr. Dyson deserves a proper introduction. So here it is. He's presently a professor of sociology at Georgetown University and one of the nation's most influential and renowned public intellectuals. He's an ordained minister who's presided over wedding ceremonies like Carmelo and Lala Anthony. He's a New York Times bestselling author and has written 20 books. He's a contributing writer for the New York Times and a contributing editor of The New Republic. He's currently on a nationwide press tour to promote his newest book called Jay-Z, Made in America. He's one of the most brilliant scholars of our time and one of the most generous and caring people I've ever met. I am so proud to call him my friend and mentor, and we are blessed that he could make time for us. I present to you Dr. Michael Eric Dyson. Well, hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
We're doing okay. We're so glad that you could actually join us today because you were on a whirlwind press tour.
I'm here with the Melissa Ford. Mama, I made it. Mama, I made it.
I'm so excited for this.
Did Marcia sit in this seat? That's all I want to know.
That is exactly where Marcia is.
Oh, wait, I'm channeling. Oh my God.
No.
I do.
Listen.
I do.
Listen. Oh, okay. Listen. Okay.
I'm just saying.
Keep it cute.
Wow.
Well, he might be in his feelings because we love Marcia so much. In fact, your intro was half about her.
Is that?
So the irony that you felt that when you walked into the room.
I'm not mad.
We discussed where we met. And do you remember where we met?
Where did we meet?
We met in 2005 on a stage.
Yes, at BET.
Mm-hmm.
See, I remember that. I just wanted to see if you remember.
Of course.
And we were on that, what was it?
Hip Hop in America.
Hip Hop in America. Yeah. And I said, Melissa Ford. Yeah. I said, she's so smart.
I was.
Oh my God. I like, she's obviously gorgeous, but I said, she's highly cerebral. And we had a connection.
Yeah. Yeah. So he became my mentor. And he's, you know, he appeared on my reality show.
That
yeah,
he did
on Blood, yes. Sweat, and Heels.
See,
yeah,
that's right. That's before Marcia came on the scene.
Yeah,
and I got my word
and
in edgewise.
And she swooped down and yeah.
No,
like
I knew Marcia at that point.
See, you still show me love. That's the day when you would still put me above her.
No, I knew her at that point, but yeah, I asked you to be on the show. And one of the other things that kind of sticks out in my mind is I had a book club with a bunch of middle schoolers, and I assigned them the new Jim Crow to read. 12-year-olds.
Light reading.
Yeah.
No, let me. When I tell you that they were voracious, mm-hmm. they were constantly ahead of the scheduled discussion. It was amazing. And so, you know, months of us talking about this book culminated in a trip to Georgetown University.
Yes,
These were kids that, you know, may not have had the opportunity to really think about what the college or university experience would be because maybe they might be the first ones in their families to think about going and pursuing higher education. So mm-hmm. I wanted to take them to a campus like Georgetown University. Right. I mean, it is one of the most beautiful campuses I've ever seen in my entire life. And I wanted to bring them into the classroom. And I couldn't think of any other person, professor or otherwise, that I thought that these kids should actually see, listen to, talk to, and really get the perspective, like, you know, a full, you know, flushed out perspective of what the university experience could be for them. Those light bulbs in their faces,
so
like they were
smart.
Yeah.
I mean, smarter than some of my college students, I must say.
That's what you said that day, too.
You know, and then with her leading the way. Always deceptive. People see the gorgeousness and the voluptuosity and the immediacy of the prettiness, but they then don't understand the spice of that cerebral cortex, that medulla oblongata, that high intensity of poetry and passion. So that's what
you need to give her wedding toast. Like, what is happening? This is amazing.
I could do that. I could marry her and then do that.
He's going to
perform the ceremony.
No, he's going to write the foreword to my book.
Oh, it's already done.
No,
there it is.
That's what's happening. So. Let's talk about your, this is the 20th book.
21st.
21st book.
Light flex, though. We caught that.
I write books like rappers write hooks.
You better stop. We just got started.
I wanted to say N-words, but that's all right.
No, we swear here, number one.
Oh, really? I write books like niggas write hooks.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I lived in D.C. for 12 years, and you're a big deal.
Thank you.
So just feel free to say that. We don't front here.
Such chocolate charm emanating such high intelligence. Thank you, love.
I have now changed my name to Chocolate Charm. Where's the camera? It's your girl Chocolate Charm here. And I'm here with Michael, Eric Dyson, and Melissa Ford.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so we know that we have limited time with you. And so we're going to focus on the book. So let me just go to IG. Posed a question on IG, knowing that you were coming.
Right.
Yes.
And I just did it today. And I said to everybody, I'm taking a poll. What is Jay-Z's best song and why?
Wow.
444 comments later. I literally posted this a couple of hours ago.
444. Oh, wow. See? See what I'm saying?
God is in the room, guys. God is in the room.
Crazy.
Wow.
That is amazing to me. So, and it's, you know what this is? It's like literally walking down memory lane.
Right.
And what is so incredible is, you know, music is the soundtrack of our lives,
of course.
You know? And so when you think about Jay-Z's songs, there's so much power behind the intention behind his lyrics and his poetry.
Right.
So just going to run through some, you know, Tech Immortal.
Oh, yes. Immortal Technique. Yes.
Mm. He says, lucky me.
Oh,
lucky me. And so he goes on to say, no, don't have me rap. We're not gonna have any rap. Let's skip the part of Melissa trying to rap, but a lot of people agreed with him. And then Song Cry is in here a lot. Actually, it's not one of my favorites.
Can't see him coming down my eyes, but I'll make
I will
song
say
cry.
Song Cry.
A lot of guys really love that.
No, well, actually, for me as a young girl, Song Cry was the first time I saw Jay-Z be less swaggy and more emotional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to so get it, right it meant back. Something you didn't have to me. Do me like that.
I was like, men have feelings. What do you mean men have feelings? So for me,
I was just messing with them girls. I was going to get right back. You don't do a man like that. What? Man, is that what? First the fat boys wake up, now every day I break up and somebody's got a problem with Hov.
Yeah, lyrics. It is a very powerful song. Right. Melody wise, it just didn't, it wasn't the one of the ones right, that right, grabbed right. me. For me, where did I go? Politics as Usual.
Oh, Politics as Usual.
I mean, Reasonable Doubt, the entire album.
I mean, you know, feeling it.
I would say Blueprint, the entire album.
Yeah,
Blueprint was amazing. Soundtrack of my life. It highlights my first year in New York City. So it really was 9/11? Very, very powerful.
9/11.
9/11, yeah. And I know everyone knows exactly where they were. Yeah. But
Jay and I were on tour. We both started our tour. I started my tour for my Tupac book on 9/11. And Jay started Blueprint on that. And neither one of us went off the road. We stayed on the road when 9/11 hit. And I did Holler If You Hear Me, and he did Blueprint.
A lot of people thought a lot of people thought that the album sales would take a hit because of the catastrophe that was 9/11.
Still number one.
And it didn't. It,
like 400 and something, it was 500. I mean, it was like
insane.
A lot.
His favorite, though. Like, okay. We're hearing everybody else's. I want to hear.
Wow. I mean, I want to hear some.
So, you want to know something funny? I didn't think anyone was going to say what my favorite is.
What is it?
Meet the Parents.
Oh, man.
Blueprint 2.
Really?
Be a father to your son. You're killing your sons. Oh, my God.
And you want to know why that was my favorite? I remember I was sitting on my couch when I was living in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. Like, I swear, it's so funny, like, how many...
That automatically gives you street cred.
Automatically.
Because you were in Bed-Stuy when this happened.
Automatically. Living at the corner of Bainbridge and Stuyvesant.
Now, don't stunt, Melissa.
I'm sorry.
The livest one. Biggie. Yeah. Right. All right.
And I remember I, you know, smoked a little bit of a joint. It was a blunt. It was a big blunt.
That was a big blunt.
Yeah. And I put my headphones on, noise-canceling headphones, and I started listening to Meet the Parents, and I closed my eyes, and I just remember he told a story with his words. Tremendous. And I could see
Mike
everything.
Yeah.
I could see everything that he was saying, and I didn't know where the story was going until the very end.
I got it right in the book. I talk about it right in the book,
and
right
I,
here.
It literally felt like I got like a shot to the chest. I literally gasped.
Yeah,
at the
punchline was
song.
Stunning. It was a hell of a song. I mean, that album. I mean, you think about Meet the Parents. You think about Bin Laden, Ben happening in Manhattan. Crack was anthrax back then. Back when police was Al Qaeda to black men. Man, some of my favorites. I mean, December 4th, when he's telling the story, you know, what more can I say? God forgive me for my brash delivery, but I remember vividly what these streets did to me. Imagine me allowing you to nitpick at me, portray me like a pickaninny. Or when he says, now all the teachers couldn't reach me and my mama couldn't beat me hard enough to match the pain of my pop not seeing me. So with that disdain in my membrane, get on my pimp game, blank the world, my defense came. And then I'm going to tell you what, the slept on one to me is Kingdom Come. Mm-hmm. Even Jay sleeps. Jay, you know, I got my only beef with Jay is how you going to put Kingdom Come at the bottom of the heap? Because when he starts, I mean, one of the greatest opening songs ever, The Prelude. I would write it if y'all could get it, but being intricate will get your wood critic on the internet. They like, you should spit it. I'm like, you should buy it. Because that's good business. The boy is so cold.
He's so amazing to me. And I have a question about Jay-Z because his evolution in public sentiment has been a roller coaster. Let's be honest.
Yes, no doubt.
And you already know what some of these questions are going to be.
Of course.
But I'm going to start with one that you might not expect.
Okay.
I do not like funerals.
Right.
And so last year I went to my first funeral for my aunt. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, my second funeral was Nipsey Hussle.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I cried equally at both.
Yes, of course.
Like, I was stunned, right? And there's a part in the book where you mentioned Nipsey.
Oh, yeah. I talked to several pages.
It was surprising to me because you pointed out something that even I hadn't picked up, where you're talking about how Nipsey and what he's doing for his community and how in a lot of ways, Jay-Z was the blueprint for that.
Oh,
pun fully intended.
That's right.
And you talk about how Black Hustle is like an entree point into understanding Black genius.
Yes, it is.
So we're currently at a place right now where we're all deifying Nipsey, but attacking Hov, who paved the way for being a capitalist.
Look, I see why you're sitting on the couch with Melissa Ford. I see what it is.
She walked in the door during the auditions and literally we started talking from the door and I was just like, wait, 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 sit down. It was
I love you. Like, it was I follow you so much. So being here right now, this is a full circle moment for me. Talking about Jay-Z to you, of all people, full circle moment, right?
No, that's amazing.
With her, there are videos that I saw her with Jay-Z. Like, my whole childhood is like clapping right now.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So what I want to know is, in a world where we are clapping for Nipsey, but we're trying to drag Hove and pitting him against Kaepernick, how do you explain to people how all three of these men are serving a purpose for our collective good?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's so brilliant. And it's so specific because, you know, when the death of a person, the scent of martyrdom sweeps away contradictions.
That's right.
Martin Luther King Jr., when he dies, is at the low point of his popularity. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want people to come see him in small crowds. He's arguing. He's depressed. And then the sweet scent of martyrdom sweeps away all of the cobwebs, mm-hmm. to mix metaphors. And then he becomes elevated as one of the most significant figures, which he was anyway. Mm-hmm. But now the world catches up to his glory. So Nipsey Hussle, of course, is being deified because, first of all, folk didn't even know what he was doing. Mm-hmm. I shared a plane ride with Nipsey Hussle for 4 hours. And I get on the plane and he says, are you Michael Eric Dyson? He said, I read your books. So I pulled my phone out. I said, are you Nipsey Hussle? I listen to your music. I showed him right now. I got victory lap. I'm so gifted, so prolific. I'm the kind of go get it. No kidding. So I'm just laying it out for him. That Louise Angeles accent. Right. That he had like right. Like Snoop with the Calabama. So the thing is that Hove was the blueprint.
Exactly.
You know, when he says on 444, I don't want, you know, go rinse your block with the money. Don't go where your mama pays rent. Go back and buy the block so you can rinse the block. Right. Mm-hmm. So his point was always about, you know, resisting gentrification and doing it before the other folk did it to you. And so when he says this in his kind of homage and homage and peon to Nipsey Hussle at Webster Hall in New York, people are jumping on him. What are you talking about? Nipsey wasn't about that. You don't know, because he was mentoring Nipsey Hussle from the very beginning. So everything you liked about Nipsey, Hove was doing it. And guess what? He's a billionaire doing it, mm-hmm. right? He has leveraged the generational wealth that he sees as necessary. He's, you know, look, racism projected him into his position in one sense of being a billionaire, because as you know, Cristal was screwing black folk and then didn't like the fact that they were being identified publicly with that brand. Mm-hmm. So what does Jay do? Forget it. I'll start my own. And that's $500 million, right? That accounts for half of the wealth that this man has. Mm-hmm. He says, I know there are bigger problems. They're much bigger problems in the world. I know, but I first have to take care of the world I know. I mean, look at that. I mean, that's just beautiful. that's just more than cleverness. Like, there's bigger problems in the world I know, but I got to deal with what I know. Mm-hmm. And I start with where I am. So in that sense, Nipsey Hussle was an amplification of the voice of Jay-Z. And Jay-Z, cool, relaxed, laid back. I know one of the things he texts me, he says, you know, this Nipsey thing got me messed up. Jay very rarely indicates an emotional investment to that degree.
He's one of the coolest people I've ever met in my entire life. Like, cool.
And
like,
it's genuine. It ain't fake.
Yeah. I saw him from a distance with the Reform Alliance announcement, and everybody's waiting for him to talk, and he was just like, I'm like, did you know you're Jay-Z? Like, I'm looking at him like, maybe you don't know you're Jay-Z.
But he's always been like that.
He's like,
I 20 years ago, I did Big Pimpin', and he is exactly the same way. He's always been very cool, calm, collected, chill.
But we're anti-capitalist. Like, a lot of people in our community hear capitalism, they hear money, and they immediately hear villain, right?
Right.
And so the fact that
they've all given up their cash.
So it's like, I try to tell people of color, there's like, Byron Allen is someone that I've spent some time with, and he's always talking about money and how the next wave that Coretta Scott King told him was, we want black people to have financial freedom, right? Mm-hmm. Like, money is the next civil rights movement for us.
Right.
And so I feel like nervous when we run away from money, mm-hmm. and we run away from those who have it and who finesse
it. Same thing Oprah said.
Yeah. So I feel like we should not be mad at him for figuring out a system that
let's not be allergic to it. Because you can use it for good or ill. You can use it to uplift. I can't help the poor if I'm one of them, so I got rich and gave back. That's the win-win.
But how do we reconcile his partnership with the NFL and the NFL's treatment of cap? Like, how do we reconcile? Here's the thing. Here's what everybody thinks. You know, well, not everybody, but most people who seem to understand Jay-Z's formula, mm-hmm. is there's a secret there. There's something he knows that we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know? Well, look, that's a very good point. And think about it. Why bet against him? The dude's track record is serious, right?
Phenomenal.
And he doesn't, in part by not running his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that
real G's move in silence like lasagna.
Come on, Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne, spit that Lil Wayne up in here. Spit that Lil Wayne up in here.
Like lasagna. Huh? I'm just saying.
And the thing is, right, or Bad Boys Move in Silence, you know, with the Diddy and Biggie. So the thing is that he got outed in a part because now we saw what he was doing behind the scene, getting Kaepernick a dadgum tryout. That's what he was doing. All the people crapping on Jay, look at what you did. He was forcing the NFL to do something it hadn't done in 3 years. Provide this man an opportunity. Now, look, I can understand people's skepticism about Jay and what he's doing, but here's the point. We need Starsky and Hutch. We need Batman and Robin. We need Steph Curry on the 3-point line. We need LeBron on the inside. Can we do both and? Can we have Malcolm and Martin? Can we have Ida B. Wells Barnett and W.B. Du Bois? Can we have Booker T. Washington? Can we have an agglomerate of diverse issues and interests that converge around practical politics? And so the thing is this. Martin Luther King Jr., Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, to take three leaders, stand on the outside, hold up protest signs, mm-hmm. protest the injustice. Then when the people get the point and ask them to come in, help us figure out how to do it. You got to step inside. You can't go like, that's on you. So you step inside to help them figure it out. Now, some would say, well, is that what Jay-Z is doing? If he got Colin Kaepernick a tryout, I mean, a real one, mm-hmm. and that was real, and he extracted more promises from them, yes, already he's been of value to us, number one. Number two, he always understands the long game. It's chess, not checkers. So he's trying to figure out how do we leverage the authority that we have generated in capital and in political and economic capital and political capital. How do we use the platform we have to make a difference? Jay ain't making no big money off of no deal with the NFL. The ultimate payoff may be the ownership of a team, mm-hmm. right? So again, he's playing the long game mm-hmm. and making sure that Kaepernick gets a chance to do what he does. Now, let's be honest. We've heard a lot of criticism of Jay. We ain't heard no criticism of Cap. And I love Cap. I've defended Cap in my last three books. It does not do harm to say to a black person who is a civil rights leader or an icon, got to tighten your strategy up. Mm-hmm. Ain't no harm. Martin Luther King Jr. got his butt beat in 1961 in Albany, Georgia. Went down there. The sheriff's name was Laurie Pritchett. Laurie Pritchett was a genius when it came to Negroes and civil rights. He said, oh, I ain't going to do this. I ain't gonna hurt y'all. Mm-hmm. I ain't gonna be violent towards you, number one. So that killed their right, because they were going to broadcast how just bestial the assault on black people was. He said, no, we're gonna be real nice to them. And then he said, I'm gonna divide you up. I ain't gonna put y'all in jails. Y'all be singing them songs and going to heaven and all that. No, you niggas gonna have two in it, right? I'm gonna spread you across the counties. It diluted the movement. It handed King one of his rare but decisive defeats. 2 years later, he said, what about if I could show America what white folk do, washing black people against the walls with police hoses, with fire hoses, and the bicuspids and incisors of police dog ripping into the flesh? It's theater. It's strategy. Mm-hmm. It's mastering the moment. And when he put it on the evening news and white folks sitting there eating their food like, that ain't right. Mm-hmm. That we can't do that. That changed what Eric Hoffer calls the temper of the times. So it does no harm to say, love you, Cap. But there's some strategy involved here. You could show up with the Kunta Kinte shirt. That's cool. That's your prerogative. But you ain't going to get a freedom scholarship from Pharaoh. You already know going in the door, Pharaoh don't dig you. He ain't down with you. And if you exacerbate the tension by flaunting in his face what he's doing, like tell the NFL, ain't nobody, stop being scared, stop running. That may be true literally. But it's not the best strategy in terms of procuring the possibility of you getting back in. And let me tell you what, I'm going to tell you my bias. I'm an old black man. I'm 61 years old. For my generation, you had to be better than they are. No end of story.
Right.
None of this like, well, it's the politics of respectability and black people. Why should we have to overperform? That's what it is, dog. That's what it is. We have to be smarter. I got a PhD from Princeton. I teach in schools where I'm one of only black person who's a university professor. There are 10 other white colleagues. You know, there are things that I've had to do that they didn't have to do. That's just what it is. Is it fair? No. Is it real? Yes. Mm-hmm. Is it unfair that black people have to put their hands 10 in one? Cops stopped us. Yes, sir. No, sir. And act like we are deferential to a point of self-defeat and self-destruction. Yeah, it's wrong, but it's real. So until we can survive long enough to be able to protest adequately to make sure that we procure the very rights after which we struggle, it doesn't do harm. You're not a sellout if you say be different, struggle differently. Like Samson, go into the building and then destroy it from within. The reason he could destroy it from within, because he got in. You have to get in. And when you get in, you can reorganize the logic. Now, let me end by saying this. Now, a lot of people say, well, capitalism, are you really that anti-capitalist? Oh, you ain't taking no check? Oh,
I don't think it's anti-capitalist.
A lot of people, some people are anti-capitalist.
Oh, no, they are straight up anti-capitalist. Some are. They say he's a capitalist and he's, yeah. I'm like, you and making money too.
No, I feel like the anti-movement is a fear of, it's a fear based in ignorance. It's a fear of being afraid to ask the question, of actually saying, I don't know. You know?
You actually mentioned that in your book, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said that Black people constantly have to defend the right to be go-getters.
Right.
We have to prove that. And one of the things I love is that you are clearly a brilliant man. You know every word that's ever been created and a couple they're still working on, right? And I kind of love, I feel like I'm getting smarter sitting next to
you. Yeah.
But one of the things that I love about you and Jay-Z and this love affair that you guys have that seems like it goes both ways is that they're showing different kinds of intelligence. Jay-Z has social intelligence. Mm-hmm. And he's able to do things that are not supposed to be palatable in a way that people who aren't supposed to like him find palatable. And I think it's really doing us a disservice by not learning from his social intelligence.
That's so
like
great.
You even mentioned in the book that he went on MTV with do-rags and suddenly white folks like do-rags.
Right.
Like, he's
I didn't cross over to them. I brought the suburbs to the hood. I made them people love you. Listen to the logic of what he's talking about.
It's brilliant. It's the optics.
And it's to deny what he has done. It's and as you said, that social intelligence, which allows him to create scenarios where the very people who would ostensibly hate him and diss him end up embracing him. Mm-hmm. You know, now, so we assume, because we're so racially biased, that when a Black man and a white man sits down, the white man got over on him. We assume Roger Goodell got the best of it. Mm-hmm. This dude made Roger Goodell and NFL do something they didn't want to do in 3 years. Give this Negro that they detest a chance.
Right.
Now, mm-hmm. we can argue about the nature of that chance, but Colin Kaepernick, who for no other reason than he protested oppression, lost the job. Not because he didn't have the skills, not because he didn't have the inclination to work hard, not because he didn't have the industry or diligence or the assiduous application of his own work ethic to his own practice, is because he stood up for Black people and they hated him for doing that. Now, having said that, what Jay-Z understands, in order for us to deal with these people who treated you that way, I've learned a lesson. You got to deal with them in a certain way if you're going to get a chance. That doesn't mean you selling out. That means you understand your enemy. That means you understand your opponent. So you go in with a certain, like Black people have always done this. We sing in Negro spirituals. Green trees are bending, ain't got long to stay here. White folk, oh my good, them darkies sound real good. What we saying? Green trees are bending, Harriet Tubman going to be here when the spring break.
We giving directions.
And y'all give up y'all's leisure time a little bit and concentrate on getting the hell up out of here. Or when we had those beautiful quilts. My, those quilts look awful nice. And they got them arrows pointing, make a left at the Johnson Plantation and haul your Black ass out of here. So Black people are entertaining white folk while emancipating themselves. We've always had a dual existence signification. So now all of a sudden we become literal. Now we don't know how to play that game to signify. All of a sudden it becomes a sellout issue. If you understand the nuance and complication, Jay-Z lives in a world of nuance, double entendres, triple entendres. He lives it on his lyrics, and he translates that lyricism into life.
You're not a sellout if you're convincing them to buy in. Like, I think the conversation is going the wrong direction.
I mean,
I love everything about this.
I do too, but I know he's got to go, so I'm still trying to steal a little bit more time because this one's a major issue.
Yes.
Like, this is a major theme, I should say. Speaking of speaking of having done Big Pimpin', you know, before I did the video, I wanted to listen to the song. I was very, very conscious of participating in music videos that were misogynistic in their lyrical content,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so there's reasons why, you know, I participated in certain videos and refused a whole, the list is longer than the videos I've been in of the ones I refused.
That's because, integrity.
Because
That's
of the integrity. Lyrical content. However, when I got the call for Big Pimpin', I'm sorry, I went. Right. It was Jay-Z. It was Trinidad. It's a yacht.
I would have been there.
I would have been helping.
Like, if I
eat
Bun B, I can be at least half burger.
And in the grand scheme of things, you know, in terms of misogyny, it wasn't really that bad. But I do want to say, just in terms of pointing out Jay-Z's social intelligence and emotional intelligence,
yes.
he has reflected back on his past.
Yes.
And he's expressed regret for some of the misogyny
yes.
that has been, you know, kind of laced in his lyrics.
Yes,
I have a question about how can we redirect the new class of rappers so they understand the damaging effect of misogyny on our community?
Yeah, that's the $64,000 question.
Yeah.
Because each generation goes through its youth mm-hmm. thinking it knows what it is and being real about women, not knowing that much about them to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so they reflect the immediacy of their perception. I remember when I wrote a book called Why I Love Black Women.
I was going to ask you about right? Why I Love okay. Black Men. And because the additional question to that is, what role do black women play in this entire movement?
That's no doubt about it. There's got to be some complicity. But the lion's share of responsibility mm-hmm. is on these men. I'm talking, why are you doing it? Well, we ain't talking about all women, just the ones we know. Mm-hmm. First of all, you're tripping. All the women you know ain't like that. But I said, won't you learn some different women then, homeboy? So let me write a book telling you about the vast diversity of black womanhood. And don't demonize black women for your own narrow-sighted understanding of what it means to be a man or a woman.
And also financial gain.
And come on, straight up financial gain. So to tell these young guys at this point, look at a guy like Jay-Z who starts with Big Pimpin' or Song Cry, where he's emotionally distant.
Girls, right? Girls, girls.
Girls, girls, girls. Girls. Yeah. Put your number on this paper. I would love to date you. Holla at you after I come off a tour.
Still my jam. Sorry. Problematic, but still my jam.
I mean, I can
jam.
Say that if somebody can sit here in this seat right. and say, I turn men out. But anyway, so I digress.
We love you, Marcia.
That's right. You gangster rapper, you. All right. So who knew? Marcia was the gangster rapper in the family.
Listen.
So I'm popping collars and et cetera. That's rappers right. So I think the thing is that we've got to constantly and consistently put pressure on them, pressure of awareness. Women have to speak back. Enlightened men have to say toxic masculinity is problematic. Poisonous patriarchy is problematic. You think you're getting off. You think you're saying something about a woman. And look at, are we the only culture that demonizes our women to this degree? You don't see white people going around. Now, they have misogyny. We learned it. It's derivative. It's a derivative tradition. We emulate it. But the thing is, we don't celebrate it in a certain way. My generation of men, they were equally misogynistic, but we ain't saying in our songs. Temptations weren't going around me and my best. We weren't doing that, mm-hmm. right? And there's something to be said for that. The reason what's to be said for that is not just this hypocrisy. What's to be said for that, I will not amplify my bigotry or my ignorance so that it becomes concrete evidence of my having failed to mature.
That's that part as well. And it's also teaching other people how to respect or disrespect us.
Yeah, that's right. Because then
your own call you bitches and hoes.
That's what y'all are.
What are you?
We go in Italy. We figure we can grab that ass because that's what they're doing.
Precisely.
There. Mm-hmm. So we got to really clean that up. We got to address that. But here's the thing. What the younger generation does understand is that there's a great deal of hypocrisy in the older people because you're getting treated that way at church. Now, not explicitly, but if you go to a church where you are 75% of the population, which black women are, you can cook, clean, sew, you can run Sunday school, but you can't pastor the church you numerically dominate. That means you're being called, you know, a saint, but you're being treated like a hoe, right? You are a theological hoe. You are an ecclesiastical bitch. Ooh. So the church is subordinating your concerns to its own ecclesiastical order, and you as a member are complicit by giving tithes to the very institution which would tie you up and hurt you and harass you. That's what it is, too. So we got to do both the hip-hop side. And we got to talk about the institutions of polite culture where patriarchy is being disseminated. Oh, no, you're a woman. You can't stand up to speak from that microphone. You can't stand up on that stage. You can't touch that that table because it is holy. So this kind of sacralization of masculinity is misogyny in the cloak of priesthood.
Pastors and mumble rappers. Equally.
Yeah.
You better talk about it.
But listen, he's not just talk because you know what? I forgot to tell you. I have to send you the pictures. We were at the Women's March together.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Me and him went to the Women's March together.
You're a womanist.
Yes.
I mean,
he's a womanist.
You heard it here first.
In 1983, I got put out of a black church for trying to ordain 3 women.
Oh!
That's before. I was ahead of the curve in that sense, that dog.
You need to come back for Women's Month. You need to come back for Women's Month.
That's when you're coming back. You're going
to
come back.
Because March is when they need to hear you being loquacious.
Hey, yes. We can do that. And loquacity
I will say, give yourself some credit in the way that for what Jay-Z did for street kids who are trying to show how smart they are, you're making it cool to be smart.
Thank you so much.
And that's important, right? From the beginning. You wrote a book about the man who created swag, but you have your own, and we really appreciate that.
Oh, my
that.
Lord. Yeah. I just love this show. Thank y'all so much.
Yes. I mean, we have limited time because I didn't even get into the book, Was Bill Cosby Right?
Oh, my God.
That's a whole...
I ain't trying to say I was right, but was I right? What up? What up, y'all? All those niggas tried to threaten my life. I'm gonna come back. Will y'all have me back?
Yes, yeah. We definitely want you back.
Absolutely.
He has to go. We thank you guys so much for tuning in. Dr. Dyson, as always.
Melissa Ford, and this is my first time actually seeing you since your horrendous accident. Yes. You are as ethereal and as evocative of such transcendent beauty and high intelligence as you have ever been, and I'm so honored to be on your couch.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to have you as my friend and my mentor. Yeah, okay.
Feelings.
Hear that, Marcia? Hear that, Marcia? What's up? You ain't the only one.
Oh,
okay,
man.
So on that note, bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
If you like our show and the content we're featuring, please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and just like your Uber driver asks, leave us a 5-star rating. Also, please leave us a review about your favorite part of the show or your number one takeaway from the episode. We read all the reviews, and this will only help us curate the content that you want to see and hear. Thanks, guys.